It is the 12th of May. Happy Thursday. A Flames victory last night at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to Flames Talk. My name is Ryan Pinder. There's Corey Sarich joining us today in the aftermath of the night before. What a scene at the Scotiabank Saddledome last night. A third period for the franchise history books, it felt like. We'll see if that stands up as this spring continues in Calgary. Flames Talk brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Check out their tap room and restaurant in the Currie Barracks, so you can find them and their delicious beer at liquor stores, restaurants, bars around the province. Corey, you were there. I was there. Building was a-jumping, and I imagine somewhere in Vancouver, perhaps even on the 19th hole, Kevin Woodley was watching as the top two netminders in the NHL's postseason went head-to-head again, and it was, well, you know, Kev, another 1-0 lead through 40.
Goaltender's dream, right? The only thing is, like, I'll stop short of calling this series goaltending porn because there haven't been enough scoring chances to fully create goalie porn. But those guys have been excellent, and it is fun to watch. And yes, I was watching, but not from the 19th hole. Still a little burnt out from that Bandon Dunes trip. I might have to take another week off of golf.
Yeah, you know, we were all thinking about your thoughts and prayers. Can you give us some context as to the performance that Ottinger and Markstrom respectively have given their clubs, and I guess has been a huge theme of the series?
Two best goalies in the Stanley Cup playoffs, despite how good defensively their teams have been in front of them. I mean, there haven't been a ton of chances. I guess I shouldn't say that. There were sort of each way trying to think of the games. Obviously, they all kind of blend in at this point. So in game three, the Stars had 10 high danger chances when they scored four. And in game four, the Flames got up to 15. Like, that was, right. I mean, those are huge numbers. But in the rest of the series, it's been like 4-3 and 5-2 and just not a lot of quality looks. And you know, I think last night was one of those. But despite that, like, these guys, and maybe even more impressive because of that, especially in Markstrom's case. And we've talked about this when he first arrived in Calgary. The one question we had left about Jacob Markstrom's ability was, could he be a good defensive team goalie? Like, here in Vancouver, he was asked to stand on his head, and he was busy all the time. And that's different than having to, you know, play behind a team that's struggling to score at the other end, that's not giving up a lot of chances, where you don't see a grade A, maybe one a period, but you have to be great on it. Like, that's an entirely different mental challenge. It kind of takes me back to the Kiprusoff days. And I used to ask this question all the time of goalies around the league. It was sort of a fun little topic and debate of the day was, would you rather be on a team as a goaltender that plays as well defensively as that Flames group did, but maybe doesn't give you the run support? Or would you rather be on a team that, you know, might be a little looser, but they're going to score a bunch for you? And every goalie's going to tell you, I'll take the looser team that scores a bunch. Because there's just an added pressure of knowing that you don't have any margin for error. And at various points of this series, well, pretty much throughout it, like, I think you've got to give both goalies credit for managing that. And maybe even more so for Jacob, just because he's not as busy. Like, it's hard to stay in rhythm when you're not seeing the volume. And right now, really, the only thing that separates these two goalies in terms of, you know, you look at the analytics, is volume. Like, yeah, Jake Ottinger has more goals saved above expected. Looking at the clear sight numbers, he's 7.5, which is really impressive. I know the public models have him higher. But Markstrom's right there at 5.5 himself. And if you sort of look at expected save percentage, which kind of makes it on a more of a per shot basis, like, let's take the volume out of it, Jacob's actually slightly ahead of Ottinger, you know, atop these NHL playoffs. You know, outside of a couple, like, relief appearances where guys didn't give up a goal, like, those guys are 1-2. And so no matter how you slice it, despite the great defensive structure in front of both of them, they're the top two goalies in the National Hockey League playoffs as we approach at least possibly the end of the first round.
With all that said, and you look at these tight games where goalies have got to do anything to keep themselves ready, I feel that Jacob Markstrom would maybe have an advantage because he's seen a lot of that from his team this year. I think this is kind of a brand new look for Ottinger. Does any of that hold true as far as just being groomed for it or seeing it more night in and night out There were first periods all year long where Jacob Markstrom would stand there, watch his team go at the other end, and then be forced to make a great save at the end of the first period. Does that is there anything to that, or is that, does it not, is it just a game-to-game thing?
No, it's 100%. If the Flames had played fire wagon hockey, you know, not that they're going to under Darryl Sutter, but if they had played fire wagon hockey all season and Jacob had never had this experience, like, it would have been an adjustment and it would have been a tough one. And this is something that, you know, Ryan and I have talked about throughout the year, like, adjusting to this style of hockey ever since Darryl arrived last year, like, that was a process. And so having been through it all year absolutely prepares you for this. And then the question becomes, do you have the ability under pressure to not deviate from how you play and how you manage, you know, that sort of different type of stress? And the one thing about Jacob is, like even when he left here in Vancouver, those questions were there. Could he succeed when he's not as busy? And they were asked as sort of open-ended questions, Corey. They weren't sort of like, I don't think he can do this. It's just he never had the opportunity to. He'd never been on a team that defended like this. He'd never had to go through those first periods where he didn't have to do anything. And then, you know, 5 minutes into the second, it's a 2-on-1 and he's got to make a great save. Like, it's just something that you can adjust to. I don't know about prepare for, but you just get used to it, right? You get acclimatized to what you're facing. And so I think there's definitely a lot of that. I think this type of hockey is in the Stars' DNA. I think it's why you saw them get to the Cup final in the bubble. Like, defensive hockey has sort of been part of their identity. But this year, I think they struggled to maintain it during the regular season. So Jake Oettinger would have seen this in stints throughout his young career, but not as steadily and not as consistently as Jacob has over since Darryl arrived over the past year and a bit. And so maybe a bit more of adjustment, and he deserves credit too, right? But the difference is he's busier, right? Like, it's a little easier, even though you're not seeing a ton of quality, it's a little easier to not make any mistakes when you're still seeing volume. And he's been busy enough to sort of stay in that rhythm. Whereas, like you said, for Jacob, the gaps feel like they've been longer between chances. They may not be generating as much quality, Calgary, but they're still getting chances, and in some ways, those lower quality chances, all they do is help keep Jake Oettinger in rhythm and feeling good about his game.
One more on this series and these two goalies. Last night, it was 1-0 Dallas. You'd sent me a note, like, make this guy move laterally. Is that something missing from the Flames' game plan, or is that something that Dallas is really defensively not allowing to occur? Because there hasn't been a lot of across-the-front-of-the-net, backdoor-type plays. And when they have been able to try to get pucks there, that just hasn't clicked on the other side.
Yeah, for sure. They haven't generated, and like you said, haven't finished. And I think you just got to keep going to that well. Like, and it's, listen, you want to do this to every goaltender. We talk about it. You know, Steve Valiquette used to call it the Royal Road. Now we call it the slot line. Like, anytime you can make a goaltender completely change his angle by moving the puck from one side of the ice to the other, that's a big movement. It's a 180-degree rotation for a goaltender. And, you know, passes through those seams and quick shots on the other side of them are the best way to score on any goalie. But the reality, and we talked about this going into the series for Oettinger, is, and I'm not even calling this a weakness so much as just a habit, and we look for habits that can potentially be exploited, is when he pushes across, he doesn't get a lot of rotation. So from the top of his crease to the post, he doesn't rotate and go straight back to the post. He tends to come across in a little more straight lines. And that means when he arrives, whether it's sliding or even on his feet, he doesn't necessarily arrive square. Like, he doesn't build angle through his moments. He gets there in straight lines and then sets his angle. And so that's something that you can take advantage of. And I would be working plays down to and through sort of, and it's easier said than done because of the way Dallas defends, but, you know, sort of down to the low flanks, you know, maybe even below the dots, and one-timers from there. You saw the great save that he made on Toffoli with the glove. He's still capable of those moments, but if you really break down that play, like, he's coming across off angle, he's relying purely on athleticism. He hasn't, you know, if you put that off the pads, he's out of position. You put that over the pads, I don't think he actually gets access to it. He just kind of put it right into the middle where that glove could reach. even on the goal last night, watch how he pushes across. Like, he doesn't, if he gets a little rotation in that push, he has a chance to get to that back goal. But because he goes straight out at it, once it's past him, he's done. So that's, it's a tendency in his game that I think they could do a better job of targeting. Real easy for me to say from here. Right. Obviously, I'm not trying to find holes in a Dallas Stars defense that hasn't had many through five games.
Let's talk awards. Markstrom is one of the finalists for the Vezina. We all expect Igor Shesterkin to win the Predators MVP, who's MIA for the postseason. UC Saros is there as well. And then Shesterkin does get a top three slot in MVP voting for the Hart. And Johnny Gaudreau here in Calgary, the conversation around the greatest even strength scoring season we've seen since the 90s, not being enough to crack the top three. Maybe wade through those two discussions, the Vezina and then Shesterkin being one of the finalists for the Hart.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because, I thought if he kept his save percentage up around 940, he had a chance to win it. But it almost feels like once it dipped below there, and I think he finished at, 935, it's like, he doesn't have a chance to win. So, you'd almost rather, because I think Gaudreau's fully worthy of being in that conversation and probably should be a Hart finalist. It's a tough one. I mean, the reality still is, if you look at league average save percentage compared to what Shesterkin posted, the gap between him and his peers, the gap between him and league average, the gap between him and second place is still bigger than Dominic Hasek's gap on the field both years he won the Hart Trophy.
Wow.
So if we're looking at historical seasons, Igor still had one, despite some of the dips down the stretch. And so it's kind of hard for me to argue against him, especially as the goalie guy. Like, I'm waiting for the knock on the door to come take away the union card as I say this. It's hard for me to argue against him when he had a season that impressive. And yet, knowing that he probably has no chance of winning it, like, I feel like it's Matthews' award. But I feel like Gaudreau's got a case to be right behind him as much as Igor. And so to see him left off that list, I don't know. I could go either way on this, but it feels a little bit unfair because I know the goalie doesn't have a chance and he's going to get his award in the form of the Vezina. So
yep.
I would have been just as happy seeing Johnny on that ballot as well as a finalist.
As for the Vezina, it's going to be Shesterkin or one of the greatest surprises of all time. Was Markstrom top three for you?
The GM screw this stuff up all the time. So
correct, yeah. They vote on this one. The professional hockey writers vote on the Hart. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really was Igor Shesterkin. 2 weeks left in the season, UC Saros actually closed the gap to the point where, from a goal save perspective, he was even, which was impressive. Now, again, in a much greater workload. But volume counts, right? UC's ability to play all those extra games and play at a level that on a per-shot basis wasn't as high as Shesterkin, but was still, top three in the league. Like, that matters. Volume matters. But the irony here is volume eventually caught up to him. They played him in back-to-back games on a weekend. He stunk in the second one. And he kind of cratered and got hurt from that point on. And so the gap increased, like it went from tied at 33 to like almost a full 10-goal gap between Shesterkin and Saros. So Shesterkin's a slam dunk. Saros should be a slam dunk his second. And frankly, you could have picked from five guys for third. And Markstrom was near the top of that conversation. The other guys that were in it were guys like Demko. Sorokin actually has more goals saved above expected than Jacob Markstrom. But they're not in the playoffs. And so I have no problem with this vote. I think Jacob had a remarkable season. Expect him to finish third, and he's fully deserving to be a finalist.
Yeah, fair enough. We got a guy here that has seen some good playoff goaltending. Habibulin, Kiprusoff, 04. Corey first, just your thought on those two goalies and what they provided that series. And then Woodley, I don't know if we've triggered any memory lane stuff for you. You can follow Corey.
Well, these are two of the most competitive goaltenders that I've ever had the chance to play with. And that's maybe putting them just slightly behind Dominic Hasek.
Huh.
And work ethic and practice, unbelievable. But completely different style of game than we see now. These are guys that played deep in their net, that were reactive, that I honestly don't know how they did it. Like, I know that Habby played so far back in his crease, and his reaction time was like second to none. And then I think Kipper might have even had him in that category. And there were smaller guys that didn't see as much, probably a little more agile and acrobatic, especially Kipper, as far as just the types of saves he would make. But again, for me, being teammates of these guys, I was just so in awe. And getting to play with like three guys like that, it's ultra impressive what these guys bring to the game. My favorite was Kipper. Used to give me top blocker all the time in practice, and he'd actually knock it away with the handle or knob of his stick on purpose. I'm like, yep, he's a pretty good goalie. That was the summary.
Just
for me.
Messing with you.
So I think the goalie has completely evolved, but as far as just pure agility within the net, Kipper probably tops for me. Wow, Hasek, Kipper, and then Habby was just a little bit more positionally sound and reactive. So, well, kind of completely different than what we see now.
Yeah, I can't top. Well, I mean, interestingly enough, I can't top that. I can't top being in the room, and I can't top like actually having him like bait you and take it away, because that's remarkable. But you know, it's interesting. Like you mentioned, Habby Bulin and playing deep, like that philosophy that he adopted. And we saw sort of like it kind of ties back to Arizona and the philosophy there under Benoit Allaire, who then left Arizona and went to New York. Like, there's still goalies out there. I guess Henrik retiring sort of ends one of them, Mike Smith the other, that the Habby Bulin philosophy lives on through. And so interesting to see. And then also when I have had a chance to talk to the Bobrovskis, you know, and I haven't even had a chance to talk to Shesterkin with the current state of, you know, rooms not opening and stuff like that. But like, when you talk to these Russian goaltenders, like Habby Bulin was a guy, especially winning a cup, that sort of like, he was Russia's Kiprusoff. Like, Kiprusoff did the same thing in Finland, the run on goaltenders that we had that was inspired by Mika's play, kind of, you know, Lundqvist in Sweden. Like, those two, they were the guys of their country to spark the next generation of great goaltenders. And some of the style that Habby used, you know, kind of became staples and teachings that other people had. And for me, Kipper, like the stuff that I remember the most, and I did cover that cup final for USA Today. So the thing I first and foremost remember the most was being up in that press box and walking by sort of some of the NHL officials when they realized that Jelena's goal may have been a lot closer than they first thought. And maybe the review didn't go as deep as it should have. So painful memories for Flames fans on that one.
Very polite of you.
The other part, yeah, the other part was like when Kipper got to Calgary, like there were things in his game that like he didn't recover. Like, he was old school. Like, he came out of that Warren Strelo, San Jose, you know, Toskala, Nabokov, straight up, you know, they'll play the post with like both legs, like a real sort of straight up, like the old school stand up style. And when he got to Calgary, he didn't have proper leg recovery. Like, he didn't get up off the right leg. You know, if I need to push left in a butterfly recovery, I lift my right leg first. If I need to push right, I lift my left leg first. Like, he got up off the same leg. And so I think, like, in some ways, getting hurt early in his stint in Calgary set him up to do a lot of that work with David Marcoux. And I think he deserves credit for adding a little bit of a technical layer to Kiprusoff's raw skill that maybe took him to another level. But you would have seen this, Corey. Like, the one thing about Kipper that always blew me away, and I heard the stories, like the stretching sessions that I heard about, if they're at all true, like 45 minutes before morning skate, 45 minutes after, 45 minutes before a game, 45 minutes after, like the flexibility that this guy had. Even that he tied his pads so tight that if most goalies were to try and play the way he had his pads set up, they'd have pop groins and hip surgery within 6 months. Like, his flexibility was off the charts.
Yeah, no question. And he spent a ton of time at it, but it was also to avoid a few of the team workouts as well.
those stories are famous too.
Yeah, that's two birds with one stone. That's a really smart dude.
He was great at avoiding the media, but he was even better at getting out of team workouts. So,
you remember the story out of Finland where they all went for a run. They sent them for a run in the forest, and he stopped and started eating berries. And as the guys ran back on the way back, he joined them for the finish. So he was famous for that.
He's a smart cookie. I have a quick question for you. I know we spent a lot of time, like when you talk about these two goalies, as a defenseman, we had a lot of conversations and a lot of game planning with our goalies. Like, I know Habby on penalty kills, he wanted us taking he wanted us taking the inside. So taking basically, for me as a right defenseman, on one-timers and stuff, I'm taking the far post shot. That's my lane. Give him the near side post. There was way we played two-on-ones. There was passes on power plays down low that I was definitely going to go down and block, so he's ready to react if it gets through me. Do you think defensemen and goalies spend as much time on this? Do you have any insight to that?
I think they spend a lot of time on it. I can't say if they spend as much as you guys did, Corey, because that sounds like, I think a lot of it's within team structure. I don't know how individual it is in terms of like from goalie to goalie, it changes. And I think that may depend on the team. Like, I remember talking with Andre Tournier, now the coach of the Arizona Coyotes. We did a Hockey Canada roundtable with him and a bunch of goalie coaches, and he talked about when he was in Colorado with Patrick Roy as the coach.
I was there as well.
So there you go. He talked about the tendencies being different on the PK, not even tendencies, but what they wanted to do and what they wanted to take away and stress on the PK would be different if Varley was in net versus Jaguar, because Varley was so athletic and explosive, and Jiggy, you needed to keep things in straight lines. That was his strength. It wasn't east-west. It was patience in straight lines. And so I think to varying degrees, teams will structure some of those things to the strengths and preferences of their goaltenders. There are still some teams, however, who will just have their structure and the goalie better adjust to it. And I think, personally, I think that can be a mistake, especially, I mean, the reality is goalies don't have the extremes that we used to see in terms of strengths and weaknesses. They're all, you know, somewhat cut from the same cloth. But if you're not paying attention to those strengths and weaknesses somewhat and integrating that into your system, to me, that's a mistake. I do think most of it is, you know, like you talk about, and I think I read this correctly, like if that you're taking away the short side or you're taking away the middle in terms of lanes for shot block.
I was taking away middle on one-timers.
You know what? And that's, especially on a PK, that is kind of the, that's the staple, right? Like that's, it would be unique to hear a goalie want it the other way. Like if I'm a goaltender and there's a puck, say, at the dot or even the top of the circle, and I've got a screen in front of me, an offensive screen in front of me, and he's setting middle and he's trying to force me to pick a side, my intuition is to pick short side, because especially if we get down to the dot where we're in a real scoring area, the reality is if I take a line from the dot and like I take a piece of string and from the dot and I run it to both posts, and this is why anytime a goalie gets scored on, remember the old saying, oh, he got beat on the AHLs, the American Hockey League side, short side? And I'm like, well, like the path to the, like, take those two strings and which one's shorter? The short side, the puck gets into the short side of the net much quicker. And so your reaction time is significantly less. And so typically on a screen, and there's more bodies in the middle. So that's the default for most teams is goalie takes short side, defensemen take the middle lane, because as a goalie, that's where the puck can route past me the fastest. So I want to cheat to that side if I have to cheat. And then on the far side 1A, it might hit some of those bodies up. Hopefully my defenseman is in that lane. But also if I'm looking around to the short side and he shoots the other way and I've got to reach around that screen or react to it, if I have eyes on that puck, I should be able to determine the route it's taking and make a pretty educated, you know, read and as I shift across and lose those eyes and have a good idea where it's headed unless it hits something, and I've got that split second longer to react because, you know, again, that string, like I said, if you lay a string down on both sides, one is much longer than the other.
Man, that's some serious goaltending technical stuff. People love this, Kev, and it's what you're so great at. Appreciate the insights. We'll hit some round two topics next week. We'll be there. That's exciting.
No shortage of topics. Lots going on. I'm curious to see what happens in a lot of these series. That mini St. Louis one, and we'll save this one for next week. But like,
yeah,
if it keeps going the way it's going, this is like Marc-Andre Fleury could be the last time we ever see a team pay big to acquire a goaltender at the deadline.
Yeah, there's some history there too in your market. Okay, appreciate it, sir. Have a good one. We'll chat
all the
next
best,
week.
Guys, enjoyed it. Thanks.
There's Bye. Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. That's about as deep into goalie technique as you can get on AM radio, I believe.
Yeah, there was No shortage of details there. It is interesting. He alludes back to the fact that you're in Denver. That's probably where you had two goaltenders that were
the most different,
completely different.
Yeah, well, I think Jagr, I think a blocking goalie and a guy that just covered space and tried to be big. And I didn't really have a feel on Varlamov, but as soon as he said athlete and like moving around, I'm like, yeah, that ain't Jagr.
Yeah, so I guess Jagr, if I recall correctly, you're trying to take away anything that makes the lateral move.
Don't make him have to move. Yeah,
and the other guy maybe try to block the shot and he can react to whatever else. So
a lot more going on than maybe
there's the defenseman's take from it.
No, we hear a lot about the other end of the ice. So I enjoy your insights and Kevin's because they're less common and I think less public conversations. Like
mine
everyone talks about, how did he open him up on that deke or whatever? But like you're talking about D zone details. That's not super sexy, but it is interesting because you don't hear much of it.
I'm a lot less detailed though than Kevin.
He's the editor of In Goal Magazine, so I think he's got the right gig.
Yeah, he's in the right spot.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll hear from Daryl Sutter and take a look ahead as we have a game in a minute from Game 5 and a look at Game 6 in Dallas. A lot of travel for these guys. They're going to come back to Calgary. The question is, are they going to host a Game 7 or host a Game 1? Sportsnet 960, the fans. Flames Talk brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Check them out in the Curry Barracks restaurant and tap room there. And liquor stores and bars have got their great beers all around our fair province. Sportsnet 960, the fan. All right, we're back. Flames Talk for Wild Rose Brewery. They're proudly brewing the beer right here in Calgary. Fired up. A few velvet fogs down the hatch last night, to be sure, around the city. Check them out in the Curry Barracks tap room and restaurant. Or just head over to your favorite liquor store bar. Check out what they got on tap or in a case from Wild Rose. Ryan Pinder and Corey Sarich here. Before we react to last night and look forward to tomorrow, let's travel down memory lane. Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. Well, it was yesterday. It was Game 5 between the Stars and the Flames at the Scotiabank Saddledome.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the 2022 QX55 for $309 semi-monthly for 48 months with $5,999 down. Drive yours home today from Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Here's Gaudreau, a stretch pass, Kachuk's got a breakaway. He shoots and he's stopped by Ottinger. Matthew Kachuk with a big body check and the game's first shot on goal on that shift. To Robertson, who steps in, Robertson shoots and they score. Jason Robertson gives the Stars a 1-0 lead in Game 5. Now Mangiapane centers, they score! Michael Backlund jams the puck past Jake Ottinger, and the Flames tie Game 5 at 1. Ahead of Mangiapane, he busts in, shoots, and scores! And the sea of red erupts! Andrew Mangiapane fires a rocket far down and in, and the Flames have taken a 2-1 lead. Every single fan on their feet here at Scotiabank Saddledome as the sea of red rises. 3 wins down, 13 to go. The Flames battle back with 3 unanswered goals in the third period, and they push the Stars to the brink of elimination. The Flames win Game 5, 3-1.
Game in a Minute brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, where they're buying if you're ready to sell. For a free trade evaluation on your vehicle, visit Heritage Meadows Road, Luxury Lane.
All right, there it is. The highlights from last night, a huge win for the Calgary Flames. And if Game 4, Corey, was about playoff redemption for Johnny Gaudreau and proving he could show up on the biggest, most physical, brightest stage in the NHL, the playoff tournament, it felt like Game 5 was about depth scoring showing up. And I don't know that three guys needed a big night more than Andrew Mangiapane, whose minutes were cut in Game 4 with 11 forwards and him stapled to the bench for most of the third, than Blake Coleman, who's certainly been working but hasn't been rewarded offensively for his work, and Michael Backlund, who has been playing a lot of big minutes but seems snake-bitten around Jake Ottinger. Those three came up huge last night.
Yeah, Michael Backlund especially. He's been very solid all series long. He's defended very well, but he has had quite a few looks, and I mean, I know quite a few doesn't sound like a lot in this series because it all in all hasn't been. Like, the whole team's been limited. But it was nice to see him right place at the right time. And you got to give Mangiapane a ton of credit on that goal, to thread it through there, through a pair of skates and right on the tape. Mm-hmm. Might have even surprised Bax a little bit. He looked a little shocked that it was off the toe of a stick and in the net. I'm just glad
it
he
just caught the inside of the net there. I mean, if that goes wide, you're pulling your hair out.
He was almost not squeezing the bottom of the stick tight enough there, almost knocked it out of his hands. But that was a real pivotal moment. Just got some energy back in the building. And it was after that, Ryan, that you felt they really had a chance to take this thing out. We were talking about it could be potentially overtime with the way the game had gone, but I think the energy in the building, too, gave them a real lift. It kind of just seemed to boost the whole team, and they took off, and the shot total of a sudden took off as well.
Well, they doubled it in the third period from 16 through 40 to 32 in total. It was a dominant third period. It was exactly what they needed, and it's a big moment. I mean, it's a great period. Okay, no big deal. It's a great period. No, they needed that great period or they were going back to Dallas down 3-2. That's a monster performance in a huge spot.
Yeah, you go into that third period, you got to have it. You do not want to be going into Dallas, and that's easy to say this morning. You do not want to be going into Dallas down. And again, patience by this team and sticking to it and I mean, they've done it all year long. They haven't overreacted. They haven't hit the panic button, and they've had success doing it. So it was nice to see them stay the course. Fan base, maybe not so much.
Nerves after 40. Second intermission, there's a lot of eyes being like, is this game two again? Because it's like, we haven't seen a goal yet. And you know what? Give the fans credit. Daryl was out early ahead of the start of the third. He'd said, obviously, what he needed to say. Word is a few of the Flames players stood up and had some words after 40, probably along the lines of flush it, let's have one good period and win this series, or at least have a chance to eliminate Dallas in a couple nights. And I think you're right with process. This is Daryl has been training them for this moment all year, it feels like. You're listening to his messaging in press conferences and talking about the way things have to be played in the playoffs. Speaking of Daryl, who I give a lot of credit to for this year with half the roster on career years, let's hear from him postgame.
Daryl, your thoughts on that one?
Postgame, every game. Tied half. Every game is either tied or close in third period, so no different than any other one.
This morning, Trevor Lewis said that Monday was he felt the most complete effort from this team. Where would you rank this game just in terms of how complete it was?
It was a tight checking game. I think Dallas really tightened their game up. And we had some guys that weren't quite ready for that. So we had to do some adjusting moving around. So close games.
What did it mean for Andrew Mangiapane to be the guy to get the assist on that tying goal and then go ahead and get the game winner?
Yeah, I think Michael, that line, switching them lines around in the third period, that was a good line for us.
Wayne Coleman was obviously heavily involved in that goal. Just what did he think of
it? It was heavy into the game. It just shows you those guys that with pedigree that have been there, done that.
Was there anything that changed in the game in the third period when you guys scored those goals, or was it just capitalizing?
No, I don't think so. I think teams are close the way they play. They don't give up much. We don't give up much. So it comes down to maybe an extra effort somewhere.
What gets said in the intermission between the second and third period that makes the team come out the lead?
That wouldn't be something that has to be talked about.
What went into the decision to move Matthew Tkachuk away from the traditional?
Line had no pace. You know, they were playing a way tighter game, and line had no pace.
Did you see anything different out of Andrew Mangiapane kind of throughout the night tonight?
No. Played a good, hard game. I mean, it's what's expected out of him. It's not what you did, it's what you do.
I feel like it's a matter of time for Tyler Toffoli. You talked about this before, but he's been in and around it.
Yeah, it's not just about scoring. There's a lot more in the game than that. Otherwise, we'd just play all them guys that scored lots of goals during the year, lots.
What did you see out of Backlund tonight?
Pardon?
What did you see out of Michael Backlund?
The line was really good in the third period.
There's Daryl. After Game 5, big win for the Calgary Flames. What a third period. Look, if they have a long spring, no one's going to forget that third period any time soon. Game 6 tomorrow, Stars facing elimination at home. Flames, close in Game 3, very good. Their best performance of the series in Game 4. They'll be back at American Airlines Center. It is a 7:30 puck drop tomorrow night. We'll be all over it with our pregame starting at 6:30. Coming up on the station, Jeff Merrick. That means Elliot Friedman in less than 10 minutes. And Harnarayan Singh will join at 10:35. It's Flames Talk for Wild Rose Brewery. Check them out at the Curry Barracks Tap Room and find their great beers at bars and liquor stores around the province. They're proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.